Let's say now the Kinna on Churban Europe. It's printed in the Art Scroll Kinnis on page 390, I believe, of Nusach Sfarad, and different prints, either 382 or 384 of Nusach Ashkenaz. Right? And I don't know in the interlinear one. It should be at the end. The it doesn't have a number at all. It's after all the numbers. So. Okay, this kina talks about obviously Churban Europe, what we call the Shaya, or the terrible events that destroyed an entire country, an entire continent. We describe in this kina the destruction of the Jews in Europe and Kihilites that had existed for a very long time, certainly since the time of the Crusades. Today I'd like to talk about different aspects of the Holocaust every year. I'd like this year to talk about a small piece of the story that's not adequately known. And that has to do with Rav Michal Ber Weissmandel and the gevura, the courage that one person had, what he accomplished, and what he might have accomplished. I'd like to tell you the story as it's brought in Min HaMeitzar. Rav Michal Ber was my Shver's Rebbe. When he came here, he had a yeshiva in Nitra in Mount Kisco. As is described, I'd like to relate to you just a story, the Gevura Saruach. Rav Michal Ber was a genius in the first place. He was somebody who, yet as a teenager, traveled to the libraries in Europe to see the old manuscripts of the Shas, of Rishayim and Achrayim. He was a Gadol B'Yisrael of the First Order in many, many ways. He was a son-in-law of the Nitra Rav and gave a shir in the Nitra Yeshiva. The Nitra Yeshiva was the last operating yeshiva that worked as a yeshiva in Europe up till and including Elul and Yom Kippur of 1944. It was still in operation. The story of Rav Meisbadl goes back to the division of Czechoslovakia. Czechoslovakia was not a real country. Czechoslovakia was a country created out of the ruins of World War I, and it patched together different groups of people. And it was Hitler demanded the capitulation of half of Czechoslovakia. It was divided to what we would call today the Czech Republic. They saw it as part of Austria and Germany, and Slovakia, which was separated from it in the infamous division of Europe without a shot being fired. Slovakia came under German control, but not under German government. It had its own, so to speak, independent government, but it was under the total control of the Nazis. And as such, Auschwitz was actually built by Jews from Slovakia. Jews from one of the cities, from Toro, was a city in Slovakia, and they were shipped to Poland. They didn't know, presumably didn't know what they were building, but they built Auschwitz, and they themselves were the first victims of Auschwitz. And in 1942, the first trains to Auschwitz came from Slovakia. And Rav Weissmandel became absolutely aware of what was taking place, even where many people refused to believe it. There was a Nazi officer that was sent to Slovakia that was put in charge of the destruction of the Jewish people after the Final Solution in 1942. And he was a German by the name of Wislinsetti, and he was put in charge, and he was, trains were going to Europe. Rav Weissmandel said that he got the idea of trying to bribe him. Chazal say Yaakov prepared for his battle with Esav with tefillah, with Muhammad, and with Dorain, with money. And he had observed a Jew who gave this German his watch in exchange for being let off, not being forced to board the train, and he took it. And he got the idea to try to bribe them. And there was a Jew who cooperated with the Nazis by the name of Hochberg, who Rav Weissmandl approached. He was afraid to go in and talk about bribing him. He approached him, and Rav Weissmandl understood that to give money that the Jews had in Slovakia in exchange for anything was a waste, because the Germans felt they're going to get all that money anyway. So he pretended to have an uncle in America. He gave him a name, a Ferdinand Rout. An uncle in America was a rich man, and he penned a letter from Ferdinand to Hochberg to give to this German, and it offered to buy off the Jews that remained. About a little over half of Slovakian Jewry had already been sent to the gas chambers. There were about 40,000 Jews remained, and he made the offer. And to his surprise, there was an agreement. And Rav Weissmandl went in himself and negotiated for $50,000 to stop all of the trains from going to Auschwitz permanently. And to us it sounds unbelievable, for $50,000, that's $1.25 a person, to be able to do this. But the condition was that money had to come from America. It couldn't be Slovakian money. It had to be from America, and this Ferdinand had promised it. So send a message to this Ferdinand wrote that we can do it. They negotiated for $25,000 up front, and for 2 months the trains would stop as a sign of confidence, and then the next $25,000 would have to be delivered. Now, Rav Weissmandl knew this Ferdinand. He called him a Goylem. There was no person behind the name. And although Rav Weissmandl had with him stationery from European hotels that he used to write the letters as if they came from Europe, he was stuck for the money, and the first money had to be immediate. And he did find someone by the name of Shlomo Stern, a Jew in Slovakia, who had been a money changer. And he had buried money when the Germans came in. And they dug up and put together, between that money and other monies, $25,000. He describes him in Ametzar, and they spent the whole night washing and ironing the money. It was money that had been underground, just washing it and ironing it. It should look like fresh bills that came from America. And Kachava, they gave him the $25,000, and deportation stopped. And they stopped, the 7 weeks came to an end, and Rav Weissmandl was frantic to come up. He didn't have another $25,000. And he sent letters to Switzerland, which was at that time, somehow, for some reason, the Germans respected its neutrality. And sent letters, and he brings them in on Mesa, the letters he got back of refusal to do it. Some of them expressed the disbelief that they are gas chambers and that Jews are being killed. And some of them were nasty, some of them were at least considerate. But he didn't get the money. And the 7 weeks came and passed, the 2 months came and passed, and the Germans got impatient. And on Shabbos Shuva, they said, that's it. It's starting again. They rounded up 3,000 Jews to ship them off to the camps. Now, you say 3,000, you talk about 6 million. You have to remember, Rav Weissmandl was there. 3,000 people. Chalila, you just imagine 3,000 Jews in a city in which you live would be rounded up to be sent to gas chambers. Rav Weissmandl expresses his frustration, his yish. He didn't have the money. And what he did was on Yom Kippur sent a telegram to Hungary. Now, communication between Hungary and Germany was illegal at that time. But he sent a telegram. I couldn't write anything about the bribes that were happening. But the telegram said, I summon you to a Yom HaDin. He wrote to the Rav of Budapest, I summon you to a Yom HaDin tomorrow. As if to say, where's the money? And it did the trick. It took about 48 hours, and he had the $25,000 from Hungary, which he gave. He was not successful in saving those 3,000 Jews. But from Yamim Dayrab of 42 until Yamim Dayrab of 44, there was not a single Jew sent to the gas chambers from Slovakia. The Jews continued to live. The yeshivas in Nitra ran. And it wasn't pleasant, but the Jews were able to live there. Maitzvah describes how he negotiated with the Slovakians. He had bought off the Germans. The Slovakians wanted the Jews killed just as much. And he negotiated with them in the arrangements that he made. The day after the money was given, Rav Maisbandel was arrested. He was arrested for, he had sent money to some of the, to Poland. He had sent food to Poland. This was all illegal at that time. And he was arrested. And one of the interesting side stories in the Sefer, he writes how he had this whole system. How did he bring money from Hungary, money from Switzerland? How did he do it? He had a system of couriers who knew how to go back and forth. And when they arrested him, he made up a baloney story. He made up a story. But he knew if one of them will be arrested, they'll tell a different story. So he writes, this is the first person, he writes that he was Nisiyaya, he was in jail. It was Sukkot. It was right after Yom Kippur. It came a Shana Rabbah, he told his jailers that he's not eating. And why are you not eating? He said, I'm a rabbi, I'm the rav of the community, I didn't eat in the sukkah a single day. Don't let me eat the sukkah, I'm not gonna eat anything. And somehow, there was still, among the Jews in the Slovakia, there was still a desire to keep things peaceful. They agreed to let him go. He went to the Shlomo Stern sukkah. And he was accompanied by an escort. He couldn't talk to anybody. Right. He got to the sukkah, he writes how he made Kiddush. The Germans had never seen Kiddush. He picked up the Becher. And in the language of Kiddush, he said in Hebrew, the whole story that he had told them, the made-up story that he had told them, and he told them how to repeat it to anybody who's arrested, they should say the same story that he said. The courage, the gevuras haruach of a person, under those circumstances, to think of doing it, and to do it, and to be able to do it, it's just an astounding level of courage. It's a story that's not well known, it's a little bit of light in a very dark period. What happened in 44 was the partisans rebelled against the Slovakian government, and the Nazis came in and took over control of the country, and this whole arrangement fell apart. Although of the Jews that remained, it is said that 8,000 Jews survived as a result of this. But that wasn't the whole story. He went next. Rav Weissmandel, he figured if for $50,000 he could save the Jews in Slovakia, maybe he could do something for the other Jews in Europe. And he wrote a letter, again from Ferdinand Rout, to Wislicki, and he wrote to him, all in couched language, it's fascinating to read. He writes, this is your uncle, I'm proud of your accomplishments in elementary school, and that's why I sent you a good gift. If you do better in high school, I can give you a bigger gift. That's what he sent him. And he understood what it meant, and he came back that there's what to negotiate. The Weissmandel actually went to negotiate. He had no chance. They wanted $2 to $3 million. He had no dream in the world of coming up with $2 to $3 million, even $2 to $3,000. But he bluffed. He bluffed his way, and he said, the money's not coming because they don't trust you. And Eichmann agreed to turn back one transport. One transport, one train, to turn back as a show of confidence, and they're not going to be sent. And the transport was sent back. The Germans and their, with their rishis comes a certain exactness. You know, they said it, they did it. They sent back the transport. At the end, though, of course, the whole thing fell apart. There was no Ferdinand Rout. There was no anybody to do it. But on that train back was my Schwer, my father-in-law and his entire family. He was too young to survive this election. He's one of the youngest survivors. He and his whole family were on that train. So in 6 million, it sounds like a tipa shabiyam. But some of us, it's much more than that. Rav Tuvia Weiss, the Geivitz of Yerushalayim, was one of a group of 10. One of the side things Rav Weissmandl did at one point was to get permission for 10 children to be sent to England. 10 children to be, 10, that's all, he didn't ask for 10, but he got 10. So what's 10 out of 6 million? So the Geivitz writes that he was really the 11th at the dock. And the 10th one didn't show up, and he went on the boat. And as a result of this being publicized, the 10th one came forward. He had somehow jumped on an earlier boat and also been saved. So although in the horrors of the Holocaust, the story of Rav Weissmandl is a little bit, but it's a something. It's really a something of tremendous courage. There was a, not a frum Jew, there was a Jew who worked with him in his efforts to the rescue. He had many people, from and not from, who was interviewed in 1990. He was already in a Moshe of Zakenim, who was interviewed about what he did with Rav Weissmandl. And when he was told that this Ferdinand Rout was a make-believe name, it was the first time he had heard of it. Now, this Rav Weissmandl had done such a good job that even he thought that there was a real person. It's a real person. So be that as it may, it's a story, I don't know when the time to tell it might be, but the gevura of Adam Gadol B'Yisrael, and he came back here, a very broken person. He said, anybody who went through it must be insane. If someone could go through it and not be insane, then he's definitely insane. When he was put on the train in 44, he jumped off. He knew was going to where it was going. It haunted him that he wasn't able to save his children. And it haunted him for the rest of his life. And the story for now is over for now. It's something that needs to be told at another time. I apologize to the women. My voice is not holding up. Be that as it may, we're going to recognize the horrors of the Holocaust in saying this kina. It's a very small piece. Years ago, we showed a video of the Holocaust video every Tisha B'Av. Before it was popular that they had all these manufactured videos. We got from different secular sources even videos of the Holocaust. Maybe it's something that's as worthwhile as the things that they do show. But at least that's the kavias. The kavias is, like in the times of the Crusades, to add the kindness for this tragedy to the picture, seen in the picture of Klal Yisrael and its galus, it's Hashem and a galus that we hope will come to a conclusion with the B'ez Gael Tzedek, the Meher of Yemeinu.